Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. I'm reading a devotional called Windows on God's World by Dr. Jim Tucker. And today's title is Straight Ahead. Our text is Psalms 5:8. Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness because of mine enemies. Make the way straight before my face. Well, I love this one. A swimming black bear has a curious habit of steering a straight course regardless of the hurdles that may lie in its path. A number of other animals share this habit. There are many snakes that insist on swimming in one direction. Observers in the tropics have reported instances where large swimming snakes have encountered a canoe and instead of detouring around it, have simply slithered over, across, and down the other side of the boat. Some land turtles are so determined to walk in a straight line that they will push against a telephone pole all day rather than go around it. You might say, that shows how stupid they are, for that is the way it seems. But animals such as the one described here, they do not know to change course when faced with an obstacle. Their actions result from built-in instincts. If a person followed such a rigid path in the face of difficulty, we might not consider him to be very intelligent. Or, depending on the situation, we might call such a person stubborn, thinking he should decide on a different course of action than the one he is using. If all we were considering was a relatively unimportant jaunt, this would probably be a correct conclusion. But there are circumstances under which such single-mindedness would be a virtue. What if the bear knew he would be in danger if he swam around the large obstacle that he had encountered? Would he then be foolish to take the chance and would be wise to insist on the extra effort required to climb over the hurdle? Further, if the turtle realized that if he went to the left or the right of the pole he would be lost, under such a condition he shouldn't go around it. In our text, King David is recorded as praying that God would make a straight path or a way to follow. We should pray this prayer. Then we must be determined that we will at all costs follow the path that God reveals to us. Isn't that inspiring? Dear Heavenly Father, I hold up to you this show. May our words be your words. May our thoughts be connected with your mind. May the young children who are benefiting from their homeschooling experience learn to love you with all of their hearts, and may we all be ready for your soon return. All this I pray in thy holy name. Amen. Ta-da! So today's devotional was about bears, and I put on my Pinterest site, that's MR Gamblin 2, a collection of different types of bear faces. And I think it would be cool if you had your older kids look up what kind of bear most closely resembled the bear face and then replicated it so that not every child in your family was doing the same bear. I mean, you can do a bear face by painting with a fork. There's paper plate bear. There's all kinds of bears there. And in the meantime, that would help them actually learn. So have fun learning. Curriculum Corner. Yesterday we talked about multiplication. Even the show before, we talked a little bit about it because one of the parents had brought up, how do I teach my children the multiplication tables? My dyslexic son just can't learn them. And I know I didn't learn them until I was way into college. And then it just, because I used them all the time, got my math certification. You know, I've even taught on the collegiate level. But if someone had looked at me as a kid, they would have said, this kid can't learn their multiplication tables. How are they ever going to pass any math courses? Well, it's possible. I'm here to testify to that. But how easy and how more quickly it could be if I had been able to know them by memory rather than have to figure them out. Any one of them that I had learned the multiples of, like the twos and the fives and the tens, I could readily figure. And then, of course, I could take the twos and multiply those multiples by two and have the fours. So really, the only ones that I really should have worked on were probably the threes. And if I learned the threes, I would have known the sixes. So as you're working with math and you realize that that is a tool, that's a hack. And sometimes when I call something a hack in my math class, the kids really wrap their brain around it. Like, wow, this is something that's going to save me time. That's why we learn the multiplication tables, because it's going to save us time. I put in my math board on Pinterest the one multiplication video that I would use. I'll tell you, I'm not much into all of this rocky music that we get inundated with, because I think it's so distracting from the task at hand. I want my students to learn the multiplication tables. I don't want them to learn some rocky music. So I found one that I liked how it went, because it showed the equation 3 times 8. And the first time it went through, it showed 3 times 8 equals 24. But the next time it didn't, and the child has to put that in. So what I would do if I were you, I would take one at a time and just let them really get immersed in that. It would be maybe the whole week they would do that, just that one, over and over and over again until they could sing it in their sleep. The downside is that now anytime they have to go to multiply, they'll start singing. So you can't win for losing. Anyway, curriculum is really, it's not the books you buy. Those are part of it. It's not the video series, but it's the path that you as the educator chooses for your children. Questions parents ask. Well, this question comes from a mom, a boy mom. She says, what are your favorite activities for entertaining a rough and tough rambunctious boy? He somewhat tolerates sitting for 45 minutes for schoolwork, but drags it out. And yet he can spend hours creating and building. You know, I think probably the best professional development I ever did was a course called Understanding the Boy Brain. And inevitably, the Lord gives me tons of boys in my little school here. So of the 14 students that I currently have, I have 3 girls. All the rest boys. So the whole school is organized for boy learning, for shorter class periods. So 30 minute class periods, and then, you know, time to get a drink, fill your water bottle, sharpen your pencil, and then 30 more minutes, and then 15 minutes of recess, and then back again. Just, and as the day wears on, shorter periods. So now it was once might be 30 minute periods, break it down to 20 minute periods, and keep them moving. Every single lesson should have movement built into it. Even when I took my high school curriculum development courses, they were advocating that even for high school students, build in movement. So many times we just expect our children to sit still, be quiet, and just, you know, like open up their heads with a zipper and pour it in. But the truth of the matter is, learning needs to be active. It needs to be engaging, and it needs to have hands-on component. So limit your teacher talk, or if you're doing a video series, make sure the videos don't last longer than 10 minutes of the teacher talking or lecturing. And then rule of thumb, first grade teacher talk, 10 minutes, second grade, 20 minutes. And then it really stops after that. Even for high school students, if the teacher talks more than 20 minutes, they are often lost. We'd like them to be like they were in the olden days, but the brain has absolutely changed. We are no longer able to sit through lectures and absorb everything that's being talked at us. We need to be engaged with the learning. We need to be doing the talking. Have your little boy do the presenting and the teaching to you. Reverse the whole role and you will see an engaged, happy little guy who's now the teacher and you're the learner, and he can really blossom so that it's a lot of fun. And please, no more than 4 hours a day. Get out there and clean the yard up, pull the weeds, build flower beds and bird houses, and watch the birds and grow the plants. So fun and so engaging. Let's see if I have time here for one more question. Question is asked by Alyssa. Her 8-year-old is asking where germs came from. Like, originally, where did germs come from? And of course, you need to, you know, take this opportunity to make a whole research project on it, maybe, and find out where creationists believe germs came from. Not all germs are bad. So there's a different differentiation between bacteria and viruses and molds and parasites. And so you can just have that one question fuel your whole science curriculum. Remember, the whole path that you're going to take all year long as you delve into where did germs come from? I love that question because it gave me the opportunity to talk about how your students, your own kids' curiosity can fuel both social studies and science, and then you can integrate it with Bible. It's just a wonderful question. So when they ask, where did germs come from? You can really say, you know, that is the best question. Let's make a research project out of it. Let's find out where germs came from. We can go to the library and we can find out the difference between good and bad germs and maybe bacteria and viruses and molds and parasites, and we can even decide on which one we really want to concentrate on. We could pick one bad germ and one good germ and that kind of thing, and how your immune system fights it off. And I mean, we'd all be dead if it wasn't for our wonderful immune systems. So that's my advice. Take it for whatever it's worth. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Homeschool Companion. And today we're going to talk with Pastor Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. And you go to his website, hopeoftheworld.org, or you can go on Facebook, Jonathan Kahn. Either one, you know, social media is a great tool. And Jonathan is, you know, he caused a national and international stir with his New York Times bestseller, The Harbinger. It's the ancient mystery that holds the secret of America's future. He's known as a prophetic voice to this generation. He has addressed members of Congress and the United Nations. He leads the Jerusalem Center, Beth Israel, in Wayne, New Jersey, and is president of Hope of the World, an outreach to people throughout the world. Welcome to our show. And I have to ask, how does a Jewish man, an atheist at the age of 8, end up writing the Book of Mysteries?
Well, I had to get saved first.
Oh, well, that's
never
right.
Never have done it. Yeah, I was raised in the Hebrew school. And when I was 8 years old, I became an atheist. And then as I went on, I started losing faith in atheism because I said there had to be something. There had to be something here. So when I was about 12 or 13, I started seeking truth. I got books on everything from religion, science, the occult, UFOs, everything. And one day I picked up a book. I thought it was a UFO book. It was The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey.
Oh, cool.
About biblical prophecy and how God's, you know, all that. And that just changed my life. But I still didn't want to give my life to Jesus. I had a rock band. I did all things that kids, you know, teenagers do. And then finally I made a deal with God. I said, if you give me a long life, I'll accept you when I'm on my deathbed. That was my deal. And right after that, I almost got killed twice. And the second time I was crossing a train track at night and I saw the light. I saw the light was blinking on, but there was no, everybody was crossing. I thought maybe it was broken. Let me go up. So I kind of inch up to the track. I look to the left. I see a light at night and it's the train. But I didn't even realize I was on the track. It was a dangerous thing. I didn't realize it. At one point I said, well, maybe I'm too close. Let me back up a little bit. Now there are headlights in back of me. So I'm waiting for I backed up a little bit, but I'm waiting for the train to come. I'm in the path of the train. The train comes, smashes into, I'm in a Ford Pinto, goes up like aluminum foil. I could only call out at that moment to God. And the car was destroyed and I didn't get a scratch. So I said, okay, God. I said, can we renegotiate that deal? I said, all right, I'll accept you when I turn 20. That's the new deal. And on my 20th birthday, on a mountaintop, I accepted the Lord. That's how I came. That's how I came to the Lord.
And were you always interested in prophecy?
I wasn't, because I didn't even know about prophecy. You know, I didn't know about that at all. It's only when I picked up that book did I know about prophecy. I mean, I was always open to things, but once I picked that up, I had no idea. I had no idea. Most Jewish people have no idea. A lot of Christians have no idea.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we don't realize how much guidance God has given us in His Word about end times.
Yes.
And a way to prove that the Bible is true.
Absolutely. Powerful.
So you wrote the Book of Mysteries. What prompted you, first of all, to call them mysteries? And why did you write it?
Well, because there's no end. First of all, there's no end to the revelations of God. God, there's no end to God. There's no end to the Bible. There's no end to what He has. And so when something is revealed, it was a mystery, it becomes a revelation. People think, well, I know God loved me. I go, but there, God is so deep. There's so much in there. I mean, and so the Book of Mysteries for those who know the Harbinger, that's a mystery. The Book of Mysteries is literally hundreds of mysteries, what I consider some of the greatest mysteries of the Bible, mysteries of the age, mysteries of heaven, mysteries that you never see when you read the Bible in English. You can't see it in English, but there's so much in the original. The mysteries of the hidden writings of the rabbis that prove Jesus. I mean, there's so much mysteries of your life. Ultimately, your life, you know, God, what's my will? What's your will for my life? It's a mystery. Your life, So it's all that. And for instance, so I know we'll touch on some, but like some titles are The Mystery of the Secret Angels, the angels that we've run into, and no matter what, no matter who you are, Mysteries of the Age, that God has set up the age like a Hebrew year. And there's there's something called the seven mysteries of your life, that in the Bible, there's actually a blueprint of seven things that are going to happen in your life. I mean, it's amazing, and it's all there, but there's just no end to it. So the other thing about it, Rose, is that not only is it there are mysteries, but also there's a story behind it. So therefore, it's a man goes into the desert, meets a man called the teacher, and the teacher takes him on this journey on mountaintops, in caves, in secret chambers, and every day he reveals and opens up another mystery of God. And so therefore it becomes, so you're taken, the reader's taken on a journey literally to all these places. And so because it's a year in the desert, there's 365 mysteries. So therefore it also becomes a devotional, but unlike another, it's like every day you're getting a full mystery of God. So you can read it right through. You can read it. Most people are reading one day at a time. Yeah. And also there are streams of mysteries where things are like puzzle pieces that keep getting bigger until the end of the book. Yeah. It all comes home. So it's all that. And then the last thing with that is that at the end of every mystery, the teacher gives the disciples, it's like you're listening to the teacher, he gives him an application, because it's not just to get blown away by God, it's to apply it to your life. And so there's always an application, and when you apply it, it'll change your life.
And the allegory of the desert.
Yes, yes.
What?
Yes. That's right.
I mean, well, I don't want to give the whole book away my listeners to have fun reading it.
No, believe me, we could not give it away. There's 365 mysteries, but no, thank you. Please give it away. No. The thing is that you picked up. Yeah, because in God often reveals things in the desert, and I'll let me just throw this in because you said it. I'll throw in you one of the mysteries that has to do with the desert. In the word for desert in Hebrew is midbar, and midbar comes from the Hebrew word dabar, which means to speak. The desert is the place where God speaks. And so often in our life, the wilderness is where God speaks the strongest and where we hear it.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely, that's why I put it in the desert. There's no distractions.
So I'm going to ask about some of the mysteries.
Sure.
So, you know, everyone is interested about love and relationships. So the mystery of the bride.
Yes. Okay. I love this one. Now, this one is one that not only are there mysteries, but this is a whole stream throughout the book. The teacher takes the to see a wedding in the desert, which is like the wedding of the Bible. And so, you know, the way they did in the days of Israel. And so throughout the book, you're going through, you're coming through the steps of a wedding until the end, like the Bible. You know?
Yeah.
And I love this one. It's hard to do in a nutshell, but here's the thing. In the Bible, this is how the wedding went. In order to get married, the Hebrew bridegroom had to make a journey from his house to the house of the bride. No matter where she lived, he had to go there, no matter what. He makes this journey, goes to her house, and then he has to be welcomed in, and he then makes a covenant with her. And he has to offer up a gift for her, a gift of his love, to show his love. It's called the mohar. And so if she says yes, it's her choice, yes, then she's going to go with a man she's never met before, most likely, and they're going to a place she's never seen before. But what happens is they share a cup of the covenant together, and they pledge each other, and then he leaves her, and he goes back home, and then they spend about a year at least preparing for the marriage. She spends the time preparing herself to get ready to leave everything she's known to go to this place. He spends that time preparing a home, a place for her. So then, finally, the wedding day comes. Now it's usually at night. He's dressed up as a king with his groomsmen at his side by torchlight. They come in this gigantic procession from the one more journey to her house. She's ready, dressed up as a queen. She's all perfumed and adorned, and her maidens are there. And the bridegroom comes, and they see each other for the first time face to face. She has a veil, but she has to take off her veil. They see each other face to face. They're lifted up on this sedan chair. They're carried away in this great procession. She looks back, sees her house. Of her childhood disappearing for the last time. She comes and she sees this house that was prepared for her. She's welcomed in. They come under the hoopah, wedding canopy. They're dressed as king and queen, celebrate for 7 days, and then they slip into the marriage chamber and become one. Well, what is the mystery? According to the mystery, 2,000 years ago, God, the groom, has to make a journey. God is the bridegroom. We're the bride. That's why we're never complete without God.
Yeah.
And so, according to the mystery, the bridegroom has to make a journey from his house to the house of the bride. So 2,000 years ago, God, the bridegroom, makes the journey from his house, heaven, to our house, earth. He comes to us, and he's the God who comes to us wherever we are. Doesn't matter what it is, he comes to us. And then he makes a covenant, and actually they share a cup together. And then he pledges, he gives the gift. What's the gift? The gift is his life. That is the bridal gift. It wasn't silver or gold. That's what sets us free. That's what sets the bride free. Then the bridegroom, according to the mystery, has to go back to his house. So he says, I must go back to my father's house. In my father's house are many. I go to prepare a place for you.
Yes.
So now is the time of the great separation. And we are spending our time getting ready go to leave this place, to become more beautiful, and to get to go to the place that prepared. Get ready. And then he's spending this time preparing a home, preparing heaven for us. It's taking, it took
so beautiful.
It is so beautiful. It took 6 days to him to do this place. It's taken 2,000 years. So this has got to be a lot better.
Yes.
So finally, the day comes when the bridegroom comes again. This time he's dressed in glory, dressed as a king, comes for us. Now, whether we're alive when he comes, whether it's at his coming or whether it's at our going, we're going to be taken home by the bridegroom to a place we have never seen, that our hearts cannot even imagine how awesome it is. And for the first time in our life, we'll be home.
Amen.
And that's a little nutshell of the mystery of the bridegroom in the Book of Mysteries.
I mean, and you can see why Satan attacks
the
marriage and the family. Because that's God's unending metaphor.
Yes.
The father and the mother, the bride and the groom.
Yes.
It's God's unending metaphor for us on this earth.
Well, we have to conclude the show. Thank you for staying with us. I hope you enjoyed Jonathan Cahn's take on the Book of Mysteries. You know, it really isn't that mysterious to me, because I believe that God reveals his secrets. But that being said, I hope that you have learned something or has brought up a question in your own mind. Thank you so much for being with us. I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.